Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, everybody. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. I'm Shireen.
And I'm Anna.
And today we have a great episode with the one and only wonderful Serafina El-Bedri Nance. She's an astrophysicist, an analog astronaut, a women's health advocate, and an author with a new book that comes out tomorrow. It's called Starstruck, and we talk about it, and we talk about trauma, as always. And it's just a really lovely conversation. So I hope you enjoy it.
Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pets? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hello, this is the star of the podcast. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Shireen. How's it going?
Good. I'm actually pretty excited about today's episode. I met this person. I've heard this person's voice maybe like a couple weeks ago, and she has a book coming out that we're going to talk about, and I was lucky enough to direct the audiobook, and I asked her to be on the show because I was obsessed with her, and she's here. So I just want to dive right in.
Let's
welcome Serafina El-Bedri Nance.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I have been looking forward to this for weeks.
Yeah, we finally did it. I'm excited.
We finally did it. No, I'm super stoked. I can't wait. Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, thank you for joining us.
Actually, fellow guest of the show, Danny Hajar, was a guest on our show. And so I've subscribed to his little newsletter, and I saw your name, and I was like, oh my God. And I felt so cool. I was like, I'm directing your audiobook. It was cool.
What a small world. Wait, I love that. He's such a talented writer. He's awesome.
He has important work.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Very.
Yeah. Very. But anyway, we're not talking about him today. We're talking about you and your work. I know more about you than the average person, especially because I've already read your book. So let's start from scratch, though. And I want to go back in time. And can you tell our listeners where you were born and where you grew up?
I was born in Austin, Texas. Grew up there for the first, 23 years of my life. And then moved out to the Bay Area, to Berkeley, for grad school. And I've been here ever since.
Can you tell me about your background, like your parents?
Yeah. So my mom is Egyptian. She was born and raised in Cairo, and then immigrated to the States when she was a teenager. And my dad is a mix of Albanian and other European countries. I always forget every time I'm asked, yeah. But he's some mix of Euro.
He's white.
Yeah.
He's a European white.
Yeah, exactly. 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 He's a tall, blonde, blue-eyed European guy.
How did they meet your parents?
My dad was her landlord.
Oh, what? Interesting.
Okay, this was not in the book. This was new information to me. Can you get into that?
Yeah. So my mom was in grad school at the University of Texas, and my dad was also in grad school, I think, maybe. And he needed a roommate or like a tenant. A tenant. And he put an ad out in the newspaper, and my mom hit him up. So, yeah.
That's a wild way to meet your spouse.
Spicy.
I gotta say.
Yeah, you usually don't fall in love with your landlord, especially not these days.
No. It's the opposite.
Yeah, I can't say I've had that experience.
Hey, that's a rom-com waiting to be written.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened yet, has it? Landlord love story?
You should pitch it, though.
I don't know if now's the time for that.
Right.
I do.
I think with the current political climate.
That's fair. That's fair.
I would not write a sort of like bootlicking style.
It's like falling in love with your cop. It keeps you.
Yeah. Busy. The guy has like Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah.
I would pay whatever $10 or whatever to see you pitch that and see that.
So did your mom come to the States to study?
No. So her dad was an ambassador to the United Nations.
Oh,
he was their head of demography, I think. And so they lived in India, they lived in Switzerland, and then they moved to the States when my mom was a teenager and lived in New York. And then she came to Texas for grad school.
Wow. What was she studying?
Demography as well.
Ooh.
Yeah. Population studies for anyone who doesn't know what it is, because I feel like some people don't know, but yeah.
Population studies. I guess it's kind of like social research or like...
It's kind of like almost anthropology in a way.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about, yeah.
Yeah, I think she looked a lot at fertility, so doing something with statistics and fertility.
Interesting.
Yeah, she has actually very interesting thoughts on whether there should be a MENA category on the census, because she worked on that for a long time.
Ooh.
I don't know. She did fertility research. She was working on the census back in 2000 for the like century census.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she was advocating for it not to be included.
Oh, really?
Because she felt that basically Arab Americans would be more easily targeted if the government was aware of where we are and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I can see that perspective for sure.
Yeah, I completely, like, I get it, but I also disagree. Like, I want that category.
Yeah. No, me too. I don't like being considered white, but I understand from a perspective of, like, maybe just to not draw attention or something that would be considered. But at the same time, a lot of Arabs or Middle Easterners, we're not white passing all the time. So it's not like we're going to get that pass. It's not like someone can actually put that and be accurate every time. You know what I mean?
1,000%. Yeah. I feel like that's something that I've really struggled with as an adult, is coming to terms with what I can claim, what I can't claim, where I blend in, where I don't blend in, what otherness means in my lived experience, and how, yeah, I think just like understanding when I am white passing and when I actually like the privileges of being white are not attributed to me and my experience.
Yeah.
And it's like very messy and complicated and hard to like, I don't know, dissect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't even know if I have an opinion on it anymore. Now that you've brought up that, I don't know.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think you do. You have to hone your sense of like when you have to, I mean, maybe code switching is not the right word, but just kind of just like use your privileges to your advantage, because it's like not just white passing, but it's like just being light skinned and like even seeing you from far away, that could even be important. You know what I mean? Like it's a little bit of everything, and it is really messy because I don't feel like I'm white. I don't think I look white. I'm very light skinned. Like I can acknowledge that, but it's just complicated. And when I applied to college, I remember I was livid because a lot of the applications they had for the race, it was like white and then in parentheses, including Middle Eastern. And I was like,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember.
I put other.
Man.
I put other.
I did too. I put other too.
And I was like, fuck you, other.
Yeah. No, same. I hate and hated being categorized as white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just not an experience we can relate to.
Right. No, exactly. Yeah. And yet, what you just said is so important about like some code switching and being able to, I feel like everybody who has some relationship to white passingness learns as a sense of survival to lean into those ways in which you can be accepted or blended
for
or
safety.
Like be more normal. Yeah, exactly. Normal in heavy quotations, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's a strange line to toe, but you are actually half white and half Arab. So I'm sure you had some complicated feelings growing up. As far as like where you grew up town-wise, what was the demographics like? And did you feel, how did you feel as a kid, I guess?
Everybody around me is white. Like I grew up in the suburbs and then I went to this religious private school where almost everyone was white. And I remember being called, quote, exotic. Or right.
That's I hate that word so much.
Yeah.
What a cringe word.
And of course, you know, when you're a kid especially, you don't like really know what to do with that. You're just like, oh, I'm different and I don't know how to make sense of it. So I think I always felt out of place. And looking back and in the process of writing this book, it's been trying to tease apart, like, it's all an intersection, right? I am out of place because my mom speaks Arabic to me in public. But I'm also out of place because I am a science nerd and like, you know, people I was around weren't interested in that. So I think it's like trying to untangle all of these ways in which people feel different.
Yeah. I also put other and then would write Iranian, even though.
Same. I would put Syrian, even though it's like,
yeah.
What does that mean?
I'm an Egyptian. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think people confuse when I say that. I've said on multiple podcasts, like some version of that or like the sentiment. And it's not that I don't like the whiteness of it all. It's just if I had lived that experience, it would be different. I don't like assuming, like if I fill in that bubble, that's a different life. That's an easier life that I didn't have. So I just don't like that assumption. It's like, I don't know. I just don't like the assumptions. I do forget.
No, I think that's true.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's okay. It's Zoom. It's stupid.
But I do think you're implicitly, not you, but when someone is categorized as white, they are implicitly, there's an attribution of a lived experience and a way of moving through the world that is distinct from the way that we have moved through the world. And it feels like dishonest. Like it feels like it dishonors our experiences. At least that's the way that I feel.
Yeah. It dismisses the struggle that is there. It's being like, it doesn't really, you're still white. So you know what I mean? In their eyes anyway.
Totally.
So I don't like that dismissing because some struggles are like fucking hard. It's not easy. And it's probably much harder for people that have darker skin tones than me or you or Anna, you know? But anyway, let's go back. So you're a kid, you're surrounded by whiteness. Again, if I'm repeating stuff that I know, it's because I already read her book. It's amazing. It comes out tomorrow. Comes out tomorrow, the 6th, right?
Yes. I just had a weird time warp where I was like, wait, tomorrow? And then
sorry.
This is releasing. No.
We're recording this in advance, but when this comes out, it will be tomorrow. And so regardless, go get the fucking book. It's fucking amazing. Or you can listen to it.
Yeah, that's so true.
Your lovely voice. But okay, so when did you first notice or like become intrigued with science or like space or all of that?
I feel like I've loved the night sky, loved the stars ever since I can remember having a consciousness. Like ever since I was a kid, 4 or 5 years old is when I really have distinct memories around stargazing with my dad. Every night I would listen to Stardate on NPR, which is truly the nerdiest thing as a kid. I'd be like, Mom, let's go to NPR and listen to Stardate. Mm-hmm. But yeah, something really drew me to it from a very, very young age. And it's stuck around ever since.
Yeah. No, it's, I don't want to get into too much detail because I do want people to read the book. So we don't have to, but I'm going to think of another question. But first, let's go to a break and we'll do that and we'll be right back.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
It took 11 years to get to this sale. The NYX Anniversary Sale is on now at KNIX.com. Celebrate the intimate apparel company that has reinvented products for real life with one of NYX's biggest sales of the year. Get 30% off all leak-proof apparel from the number one leak-proof brand in North America, including period underwear, swimwear, activewear, and more. Millions of people have made the switch to NYX leak-proof underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try. Save 30% on super comfortable, machine-washable, and great-looking underwear that's perfect for periods and light bladder leaks. Choose from a variety of colors, styles, and sizes, from extra small to 4XL. You can even match your leak-proof underwear with an incredibly supportive and comfortable NYX wireless bra. Don't miss this chance to stock up on your NYX favorites or try something new. It only happens once a year at NYX.com. That's KNIX.com for the NYX Anniversary Sale. Hurry, the sale ends on Monday, May 13th. Go to NYX.com. That's KNIX.com.
Okay, we're back. I want to know, well, I want the listeners to know. I know the story, but can you tell us about your experience at space camp?
Science camp.
I was not allowed to do any of that stuff growing up. I wasn't allowed to sleep anywhere but my house. So all those like overnight trips and anything, I was so jealous of kids that did that. And I feel like reading about it, I like lived vicariously through you. So it was really nice to read. But can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So I went to sleepover camp, which also happened to be science camp, which, again, if anyone's curious about how nerdy I am, this is basically me showing the world. Just, I've been a nerd ever since I was a baby. And yeah, I basically got to spend 2 weeks exploring the hill country of Texas with my pals. And I think it was such a fun, wonderful memory that I have because I'd really struggled with pressure even at that age in school. And camp was this, especially science camp, was this sort of like way of breaking free of that stress and learning in a very unencumbered, unstructured way. And at the end of camp, an astronomer came and I was very, very, very excited to meet him. I'd been looking forward to meeting him.
Because you hadn't met someone like that before.
No, he was the first person that I knew of who devoted his life to studying the stars and researching. And yeah, I was super, super excited. And my teacher, the organizer of the camp, brought him in and told me that I would get to meet him and allowed me to sort of go early before everybody else and chat with him because she knew I was interested in the stars. And, you know, I ran up to him and I had this unbridled joy and yeah. Was...
What age were you again, just as a reminder? Because you were a kid.
I was in fifth grade, so you're...
11.
10, 11?
10, 11, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I ran up to him and I was just like, it's so cool that you're an astronomer. I want to be an astronomer when I grow up. And he, you know, blatantly just flat out said, this is not for you. And I think so much of my like journey and in finding my carving out a place for myself in science and in proving to myself that I'm capable of doing science has been this unlearning of that message and that notion. And I think that it's so common for young girls to be told that. I think it's obviously exponentially worse when you have an intersection with another marginalized identity. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think you and I ended up internalizing that and have spent a lot of my time trying to disprove that notion and resist that.
So he just said that because you were like a little girl?
Yeah. I wanted to emphasize how old you are because like you're literally a child. Like, you're 10 years old.
Yeah.
First of all, like, what does that even mean? Like, it's not for you. It's like, what?
Yeah.
I think that, again, that's like one of those things when I write about this in the book of like, I didn't know why he said that, you know? Was it because I was so excited? Was it because I was a girl? Was it, what was that?
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, he said it and it was sort of my first crystallized instance of being told that this is not for someone like me. And yeah, I think trying to make sense of that.
I think it's what really infuriates me is the fact that he probably does not remember that moment. It was just this comment he flippantly made, and it's totally. Been like a cornerstone in your anxiety for your lifetime. Like, that's what really infuriates me about comments like that, especially to children.
Mm.
Like, you never know what will be the starting point of someone's fucking trauma. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, even just that, the sentence, like, it's just, you're constantly trying to prove him wrong, right? Even like subconsciously, not him in particular, but that message got told to you way too soon or it shouldn't have gotten told to you at all. But I just hate that he probably doesn't remember that. He probably doesn't even think about it. There's just a fucking moment in his life where he was another fucking rude asshole. It just makes me so mad.
Right. I think that's the, I don't know, when people talk about institutions or structures or the way that our society has functioned for a certain period of time. I mean, that's kind of the thing is that this guy is, you know, he's a bad actor, but he's also sort of representative of the way that we view or have viewed women's place in science or in careers or in, you know, like more analytical fields. Like, I think, you know, there's another instance of, I was in sixth grade, so I was 12, and a woman, the dean of my school, told my dad that girls aren't cut out for math. And I don't think she meant anything malicious by it. Again, it's sort of a throwaway comment. And I think, you know, she is sort of a symptom of this larger feeling that, oh, it's normal that Serafina's having a hard time in math because girls just aren't good at it. So these people are, they're representative of something bigger.
Yeah. Because, she doesn't have bad intentions saying it. She doesn't even mean that as an insult. She's, like, saying
it
as a fact. Like, oh, this makes sense because of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, like, permissible.
That's so sad. That internalizedness of it all, because she's also a woman. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's kind of sad.
It is. It's heartbreaking. Like, when you look, of course, like, it felt bad to me in that moment. But looking back, I'm like, she's a wonderful lady. Like, she, you know, it's the way that she has learned to categorize, like, what women can and can't do. And I think that's part of what my book is about. What my life is about is trying to like carve out ways that we can, you know, pursue whatever our dreams are, whether it's science, math, astronomy, writing, literature, whatever it is, and like break free of those stereotypes.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
Adults are fucked up.
I could tell that made Anna mad. I love that. I love that Anna space.
I just don't like stuff like that.
No, it is. Yeah. And that's the thing is it's stuck in me. That's like another thing that's wild. It's like, I can't believe now as an adult, I can't believe someone said that to me.
Right.
You know, it almost doesn't feel real, but it is.
Imagine you saying that to a child.
No, I mean, it's like beyond the pale. And yet this shit happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the time.
And I just struggled. It makes no sense to police a dream in a way.
Mm.
Like to be like, oh, this isn't for you. Because it's like, well, first of all, you as an adult, you exist in a certain era. And you have no ability, no one does, to, you know, project any sort of ideas in the future that you don't know what's going to happen. So to say like a child shouldn't do this or a child shouldn't do that is like, you don't know what's happening here and you don't know how the world is going to change for the worse or for, you know, the better. So like, there's no reason to even project anything onto that kid, to be like, oh, this isn't for you. Genuinely, I feel like we have such a sort of, we do not have a grasp on life. Like, you can't just say this is how it's going to be, because you can work your whole life to try and do something and it might not work out. Or you could, you know, as most white men do, trip, fall, and have a career as a CEO. So it's like, you have no ability to predict these sorts of things. And I think to even like say anything to a child about their dream to, you know, try and shut it down in any way is a very sort of sick thing to do in my mind. Like, it's not your business.
No, it is. And I think it is so common for white men to believe that the world functions in a certain way and say things like that.
Yeah.
And like, it is damaging, and it's part of the way that they prop themselves up and they maintain these institutions. And I also think that when this happened, it was what, 15 years ago? No. Yeah, 15, 20 years ago. I don't know what the cultural diet, like, I don't even know if there was a sort of like awareness around what, how to like mind, like how, the power that language has.
Like the phrase women in STEM.
Yeah.
Was that a thing?
Right, exactly. And I think we can talk about it now and say how fucked up it is, but I really don't know what it was like back then.
Yeah. I think to piggyback off of what Anna said, it also does not affect his life. You know what I mean? Like, you studying something, this person that you're going to meet one time, you know what I mean? Why would that affect your life or your happiness?
It's about power.
If someone is shitty,
I think.
Yeah, it's about power. I really think shitty people do shitty things sometimes to benefit themselves. But in this case, like, what's the benefit? You're just being a shit person.
I don't mean to speak in like generally, but I do think that like white men are threatened by people who don't look like them, who might, you know, like destabilize what their image is of what an institution should look like.
Of them being in power.
And I know that's a really general statement, but yeah, I mean, like, you and I and Anna are threats to them. Like, we threaten their sense of like what, and again, it's not to generalize, but I think there is something about our existence is threatening. And when we express our dreams, what could be more threatening than that? Is a woman with dreams and motivation and a desire to like potentially change the status quo. That's scary.
Yeah.
Even a 10-year-old kid.
Yeah, that's, I guess, the issue is they can't let go of the idea that, or well, they can't accept the idea that the world is going to progress. And to me, that's such stunted thinking. It's like, grow up.
Yeah.
Why are you sitting here thinking the world revolves around you? Like, guess what? We progress.
No, that's absolutely
we always progress. Remember what computers used to look like? Now they're like flat screens in your hand. Like, what did you think this was?
Yeah. They're just so used to it. They don't know anything different. So for them, it's like, that's normal, in quotes. That's the way the world works. It's, I am going to be on the top of the pyramid forever.
Like, sorry, little girl, only men are astrophysicists. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
It really is that the Michael Jordan meme of like, and I took that personally.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck you. Thank you for saying that because means. Fuck you. I'm coming to step on your face to take your job. It's like, get out of here with this nonsense sort of old timey, like.
I think to turn it on its head like that, to acknowledge that it fucked you up, but to also use that to be like, I proved this guy wrong. That's also, that's, I think that's the best kind of revenge, if you want to call it that.
Totally. And that's like the dream, right? Like that's, you want to prove all of these people wrong and you want to reclaim that power and that like sense of agency for yourself. But I also think, and I mean, I know you've like listened to the whole book, I found it's really important to acknowledge the damage that language like that and actions like that inflict on people.
And sometimes it's way more subtle and way more consistent.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that's maybe even more insidious because then you internalize it as fact.
Right. I think I write about how there's these subtle, implicit messages that happen on a like micro level every single day. Like when you're in class as a kid and you're in math class and the teacher only calls on the boys, right? Like that's not obvious, but I internalize, oh, boys are good at this. And then you compound that year over year and suddenly you realize, I'm not meant for math or science. And then on the other hand, you have the explicit messages. You have these like not bad actors, but you have these people who are explicitly saying, this isn't for you. You're bad at this or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, you have built this internal dialogue of I'm not enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. And that's insidious, as you said. And that's really like harmful.
And extremely hard to undo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I felt in your book something that I hadn't thought about in a long time, but when I was younger, I really loved space. I wanted to be an astronaut. Like, I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And I also wanted to study the brain. Like, I wanted some type of, like, neuro whatever. Even psychiatry, once I learned what that was. But, like, I wanted something like that. Both of those things require science. And I'm not very, like, I wasn't innately good at it. My sister was great. And so I'm like a year and a half younger than her. So it was really hard to not be good at it. And when I literally failed AP chemistry, and it was just like, oh, I can't do that, I guess. Like, it's just not for me. And that was really hard because that's which the fact I accepted. But what I really liked about your book is that you didn't accept that. Like, you didn't fail AP chemistry, but you struggled. It wasn't naturally like you weren't a whiz at everything. And I really love that you struggled but kept going, because I wasn't able to do that. And I'm sure a lot of people just like, not even because they don't believe in themselves, but more so just because it's like, oh, I guess they were right. It's not for me, like, or whatever it is. Or everyone tells you how hard it is, like implying that you can't do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, what's actually interesting is I have done, I don't know, countless podcasts now at this point about this book. And almost every single woman who I speak to has a story like yours. I didn't know that going into this whole process. And it is striking how ubiquitous that experience is. And, you know, I attribute my, I don't know, resistance to giving up to a lot of things. Like, namely, I had wonderful mentors who stuck out and really lifted me up. And I also freaking love space. I was like, no one's going to tell me I can't do this because I love it so much. And then I had this, I really think that my relationship with the universe and with like learning about the universe is deeply tied to my humanity. And the only way I can make sense of like being alive and contextualizing my anxiety and staying grounded is to know that we are so small in sort of this massive, enormous universe. And that is like a survival, like that's about survival. That's not about something more trivial. And that has carried me through. But yeah, I think it's such a ubiquitous experience for people to, you know, think I'm not inherently good at this. Other people are, so I should quit.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately that's, there are very few people who are just meant for something. Like, there are very few people who are just born to be physicists or born to be writers. I think it's like, it's a lot of time and effort and all these other things and resistance to, it's learning to fail and not being dissuaded by that failure. And a lot of that is shaped by the people that you're around and the messages that you're told.
Yeah. That's what's sad. You can't control that stuff growing up, right? And so, I mean, I never really learned how to fail and also get over it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, like, failing meant, like, you're bad at this, move on. But that's what I really enjoyed about your book. I think it's so important because I hadn't read a story yet like that. That was, like, this like, quote-unquote version of me. Like, this person that's similar to me, she kept going and didn't give up. Like, that gives me hope for the girls that will read your book, or like whoever, like the marginalized people that will read your book, to be like, oh, it's not me, it's this world that's made me believe that it's me. And so I really liked your book for that reason, because it really like took me back to that feeling that I had and how hard it must have been to overcome that. I really admire that.
Thank you. I think it's been a lesson for, like, I've tried to learn that for a very long time. You know, I've had countless therapy sessions of, like, acknowledging the imposter syndrome that I feel when I am in a room full of physicists who are also white men, and recognizing, like, I feel stupid because this place doesn't look like me. And I feel out of place because I am out of place. And that's just a fact. And like, it's acknowledging, as you said, all of these external things that shape how you show up and how you belong. And that's hard to do. It's like, I think we're, as a culture, slowly starting to acknowledge things like systemic racism. And we're slowly starting to acknowledge like institutional ways in which people feel otherized. I was just reading this, like, do you know who Orna, I don't know her last name, She is a therapist who, anyway, she just wrote this, I think it was an op-ed in the Times about the way that she treats her patients. She's on a show on, I think it's Showtime, called Couples Therapy.
Oh, yes.
And it's like so great. And she writes about how she brings in these institutional players into interpersonal conflict or like one's sense of self. And it's so important. And we're like, I feel like the like cultural dialogue is starting to get there. I don't think it was there 15, 20 years ago mm-hmm. when we were kids, but I think we're trying. We're slowly getting there.
Her name is Dr. Orna Gralnick.
Thank you. Dr. Orna Gralnick.
Yeah, that's interesting.
She's phenomenal.
I haven't seen that show.
She's great.
Oh, this season currently is very intense.
You should.
Oh, really? Oh, there's more than one? It's not new?
This current season is about sort of like polyamory and stuff, like in relationships. Or well, there was... Well,
I'm on season one still, so I'm excited to
keep going. It's honestly, I don't know why watching real life therapy really stresses me out.
I can only watch it with either my partner or like friends, and then we pause and talk about it. I can't watch it alone. I'm like, I can't That's have too this much. Many hours of therapy.
It gives me so much anxiety. I like can't handle
really?
It. I'm always like, this is somehow it's bad for my mental health. I don't know. It's a lot. It's just because it's so real.
Mm-hmm.
And people just saying
very
this
very visceral.
Yeah, and you're like, mm-hmm. Yeah. You just said that? You said that out loud? And I guess it is supposed to be therapy, but sometimes it's hard for me to be like, but they're filming this.
I know, but I think people forget.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think people on that show, you have to, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to vulnerably show up in a therapy appointment, you're not going to be worried about how you show up on camera.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
You should watch it.
I should.
It makes me think if they recorded my therapy appointments. Oh,
dude,
my.
I know. Oh my God. I just had therapy an hour ago and I'm like,
I would be ruined. People would be like, what the fuck is wrong with her? Like, the things I say in therapy are so like, it's like all my things that I would never say out loud. I'll be like, this stupid mm-hmm. bitch. This is exactly what I think about this stupid bitch. Like, and it would just be... It would probably ruin my life, but I guess that's why you need therapy. That's why I need
that's
therapy.
Why it's confidential.
I cry at almost every therapy appointment.
Oh, same.
Just like, I'm sorry, I have a lot of feelings.
Yeah, I have way too many feelings that just come out. It's crazy.
I rage sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes I threw a chair one time.
Fucked up feeling.
I shouldn't say that out loud.
Wait, you what? What did you do?
I threw a chair at the psychiatrist that made me mad. I was like I was a teenager. That's not an excuse.
That's like he just pure teenage rage.
I love that. Yeah. I think that's amazing.
I just went through so many like psychiatrists/therapists growing up, and this fucking man made me so mad, and he was so dismissive. I literally got up and threw the chair I was sitting at him, and then I left the room. I never saw him again.
That's incredible, honestly.
I don't even remember exactly what he said, but I remember feeling dismissed, like not taken seriously or something.
A therapist who dismisses you, I feel like, is like, malpractice has a real meaning, but it feels like malpractice. It feels like you're not supposed to be allowed to do that.
I was like, oh, I'm done. Oh, okay, that's it. I'm done. And I do think I have a lot of rage in me. I think my main baseline personality is anger and rage. And I have done a really good job of... I was a really angry, angsty, like preteen teenager. I wasn't like an angry kid. I've always been like kind of like temperamental, but it's been interesting to kind of manage that anger and direct it in certain ways. Or for example, for my birthday this year, I went to a rage room and just like hit things with a bat.
Wait, what? What's a rage room?
A rage room is, well, I've always wanted to try it. It's my first time trying it. But it's a room where, depending on where you go, they supply you with like a bat or like a mallet or something, or just like a bunch of glass bottles, and you can throw them against the wall. You can smash everything you want. You can like, there's like the place that I went to had this big like oil can looking thing that I can like hit over and over. And it was incredible.
That sounds therapeutic as fuck.
I just, to hit something with actually all your strength is not something I've actually done before.
Yeah.
Or like to like
and like zero reprisal.
Nothing. Like they want you to. So anyway, but yeah, I have a lot of rage and therapy can help that. But today's not about me. I'm gonna stop talking. So let's take our second break. Let's take our second break. And we'll be right back.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
It took 11 years to get to this sale. The Knicks anniversary sale is on now at knix.com. Celebrate the intimate apparel company that has reinvented products for real life with one of Knicks' biggest sales of the year. Get 30% off all leak-proof apparel from the number one leak-proof brand in North America, including period underwear, swimwear, activewear, and more. Millions of people have made the switch to Knicks leak-proof underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try. Save 30% on super comfortable, machine-washable, and great-looking underwear that's perfect for periods and light bladder leaks. Choose from a variety of colors, styles, and sizes, from extra small to 4XL. You can even match your leak-proof underwear with an incredibly supportive and comfortable Knicks wireless bra. Don't miss this chance to stock up on your Knicks favorites or try something new. It only happens once a year at Knicks.com. That's KNIX.com for the Knicks anniversary sale. Hurry, the sale ends on Monday, May 13th. Go to Knicks.com. That's KNIX.com.
And we're back. I was thinking about this a little bit. I've thought about this before, about why I was angry. And I think it goes back to the people that you surround yourself with and the messages you get. I didn't grow up being allowed to like express myself or my emotions, rather. I had no idea how to describe how I was feeling, how to understand how I was feeling. No one wanted to listen to it anyway. I was very sensitive in quotes growing up. And I directed all of that into anger because I was so frustrated. And I think, I don't know, it just goes to show like how important it is to, I mean, you can't control those things, obviously, but to even like recognize it as that makes me feel better, being like, oh, that's why.
Absolutely.
I was like that.
No, I mean, I think that like a good therapist, that's their whole, it's not to fix your emotions, it's to figure out where they're coming from and why you feel them in the first time. I'm not a therapist, but that's what I take away from therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing to fix.
Exactly.
But I think a lot of children of immigrants feel that way of like, sometimes it's because like my parents weren't like, oh my God, how are you feeling? You know, like my dad was like, you have a roof under your, or you have a roof over your head? Stop complaining.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, I feel so much. And they'd be like, shh, you know?
Yeah.
So there is no way, you don't learn to process the emotions correctly. And that, you know, bubbles up in different ways. And like for me and you, it was anger. It was like, what the fuck?
It was actual pure rage.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how to handle this. So I'm just screaming. Like, I don't even know what I'm screaming. Half the time, I don't even know what I'm screaming about. I'm just screaming because I have to get all that sort of like pent up emotion and stress and like anxiety and depression just like out in one fell swoop where I feel like, you know, I'm losing my mind. And then, you know, my parents would be like, I don't know. You seem crazy.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm still like, the crazy one.
You know, and then you go and you meet your extended family in the foreign country and you're like, oh my God, it's from all of you people.
Yeah.
It's genetic.
Yeah. No, 1,000%. I feel like anger and anxiety, because mine shows up as anxiety. And I feel like they both are similar in the sense that you have a lot of emotions and they culminate in this surface level thing that you feel in your body as anger and I feel in my body as anxiety.
It's a pressure cooker either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. You talk about your panic attacks in the book, and you describe them pretty well, because I've only had maybe like a couple actual panic attacks. Mm. I have a lot of anxiety, but to have like actually like that feeling of not breathing, you describe that really well.
The words really came.
I think it's just impressive when someone describes stuff good, because I can't do that. Stuff good.
You talk stuff good. Yeah.
Okay, I want to actually talk a little bit more about your book. We haven't even said the title yet. I'm going to say it in the intro, so we're going to do that. But can you say the title for us?
I feel like we haven't really given even a full picture of all that you do.
Yeah.
Totally.
Tell us everything.
Give us your bio. Give us the title. Give us the bio.
Okay. So the book is called Starstruck. It comes out June 6th, tomorrow.
Tomorrow!
Which is fucking crazy. And yeah, I am an astrophysicist at UC Berkeley. I am an analog astronaut, which means I did a simulation of being an astronaut on Mars, and I can talk more about that. I am a women's health advocate. I carry the BRCA2 genetic mutation, which puts me at high risk of breast cancer and ovarian cancer. And I had a preventative double mastectomy when I was 26. I'm a dog mom.
That's important. Yeah. That's just as important.
Those are some things about me that I do.
Yeah. No, I love the conversation, but I do want people to know just how accomplished you are as well. And I also want people to buy the fucking book, because so much of your soul is in that book.
Thank you.
I really encourage everyone to read it, especially just, I don't know, there are so many people that are just like me probably that had bigger dreams than they actually thought were possible or something like that. I don't know, some cheesy thing like that. But I think like, I'm not easily moved. I'm easily moved by certain things like animals, but it'll be hard for me to get like a genuine concerned or like, oh, this reminds me of my childhood. That's rare a little bit. And this was, it was kind of therapeutic for me to actually listen to you read it out loud.
That means so much to me. You have no idea. I'm so glad you liked it.
It was also you reading it brings it to life in a way. You know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are a few passages where I was like, I think we both had the reaction of like, I'm really glad I'm the one reading this, because I can feel all of the words that I'm saying.
The weight is there. Mm-hmm. And the experience that you've lived it.
Yeah.
You had to describe it and write it.
Yeah.
And you're reading it out loud.
Yeah. It's a really weird experience. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. I want to talk about that a little bit. Why did you decide to write a book? And what was that whole experience like?
You know, I still have yet to come to like a perfect answer to that question. I think I was healing from my mastectomy, and I had a lot of downtime. I was like in the middle of my grad program, but I was, you know, taking a month away to get my limbs back to normal. And I was trying to understand a lot of the like threads of my life, like what brought me to this point? How did I get here? Why do I feel so anxious all the time? Why do I feel so out of place in physics? Is this a me thing? Is this a ubiquitous thing? And I think, you know, I've always loved reading. Like, but I'm an only child. Books were my best friend as a kid. Like, literally, books were my best friend. And I love to write. I think in another life, I would be a writer full time. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was at a point where it felt really important to try to tease apart some of these themes that keep showing up in different parts of my life. And that's kind of where the book came from, is, you know, this feeling of never being good enough. Where does that come from? Why do I feel that way? Mm-hmm. This, you know, love for the night sky. How has that propelled me and kept me going? How do I make sense of carrying this cancer-causing genetic mutation? And how do I categorize that with my parents and, like, you know, this lineage of trauma that shows up in your genes in more ways than one. And I think the more I thought about it, the more I was just like felt compelled to write. And yeah, I just sort of started. It took me 9 months to work on the book proposal, which was so hard, such a hard process, but it was really important because, I mean, it's like writing an essay. You start to understand like, okay, what are we really talking about here? Like, yeah, this is a memoir, this is a book about my life, but really this is a book about resilience, you know, for some people. This is a book about intergenerational trauma for some people. Like, this is a book about these big, weighty topics that shape a person's life. And then how do others relate to it? Like, and that's why it means so much that it, you know, you felt something from it, because I think this was an exercise just as much in me trying to make sense of my life as it is about trying to help others feel like they belong. And I felt like I didn't belong so much in my life. And
that's, we made that podcast with that sentiment, literally. Yeah.
Sorry,
I interrupted you. You were doing such a, oh, God damn it, Shireen.
No. I mean, I think that's like, that's why this is so important. Like, that's why, you know, we talk about these things, because I think, I don't know, my therapist said something the other day where she was like, trauma, I'm going to paraphrase it poorly, but it's like, you know, a traumatized response is like, especially bad when you feel alone, when you're walking that path alone. And, you know, you're so much more empowered. You're so much more like able to face whatever life's challenges come up when you have a community and you have a sense of belonging. And that's what I hope this book brings to people.
I hope so, too. And yeah, I mean, that you bring up a really good point about trauma and anxiety, anger, whatever it is, like dealing with it alone is what puts it over the edge.
Yes.
Like it's you know what I mean? Like you can, I feel like having someone there can pull you back so much easier. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, especially children of immigrants or marginalized communities, or people that didn't feel like they belong. I think anyone that listens to this podcast probably, like, the whole point of this podcast was because, like, we feel alone. Yeah. I don't want people to feel alone. But it's trying to unlearn that and be like, not only, I don't know, I still have trouble with that, to be honest, of, like, not feeling by myself and, like, accepting that I can ask for help or, like, something like that. Like, I don't know.
Absolutely.
But I do think your book will help. And I do think it's just like one step in the process of trying to better how we feel about ourselves, right?
Yeah, I think you said that so well. And I think, like, I admire so much that you and Anna have created this space for, like, conversation about topics that, like, I've been scared to talk about, I've been scared to think about, and I felt alone in. And I happened to write a book about that, like, some of it, but it's so much scarier when you're siloed in your own brain and trying to figure out, like, am I wrong? Am I right? Is the world right? And, like, we resist, we empower ourselves, we reclaim our sense of agency when we break free of that silo and we find others who, you know, bring light in the dark, basically.
Wow.
Yeah.
You are a writer.
Cheesy. I don't know.
That was so poetic. I love that. But no, I do, seriously, it comes out tomorrow. Go buy it, support Serafina, but also listen to her read it too, because one, I directed it, so that's, who cares?
That's important.
But I do think, hearing someone describe something they've lived through is pretty therapeutic in and of itself, at least for me. I'm a very, like, auditory person sometimes. Like, I do love to write, but I do find that sometimes even, like, saying stuff out loud is really helpful for me, more so than writing, only because writing takes more time and I have more time to edit myself.
Absolutely.
So, like, I tried to give journaling a shot and I still do it here and there, but genuinely, like, maybe this is, like, unhinged of me, but I sometimes record myself talking to myself as, like, just to, then I watch it back and, like, process it. And it's kind of crazy. It's like a video diary versus, like, a real diary.
I don't think that's crazy at all.
I've just never heard of anyone else doing that. So I feel crazy when I describe it.
I literally talked to somebody at a networking event because I don't know. I'm whatever. I was like, what do you do to, like, manage your anxiety? She's like, I record myself.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa.
That's great.
So I talked to my dog. You know, yeah. Like, we all... I could never journal.
It's like saying it is vital. And I'm just so glad you wrote this book. I'm so glad we met. I'm so glad you're on this podcast. And I'm really so excited for, like, the next chapter, pun intended, of your life. Like, I think it's I think it's going to be great. And I don't know. When are you done with grad school, by the way?
Fingers crossed, December.
Ooh.
Of this year. So
that's some big changes coming.
Yeah, it'll either be December or May. I know. It's a big year. But yeah, I feel so grateful that this journey brought us together. And Anna, it's so great to meet you.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel less alone, at, you know, on this pod. So thank you.
Yay. That's what we want. but no, this is not the end. I think...
this is not the end.
Our podcast has changed a lot over the years. Like, we used to do a lot of news and stuff. But as it's changed, I think it's become more therapeutic, at least for me, to like have conversations like this, where it's a conversation I would have regardless. It just happens to be recorded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I think, I don't know. I hope people find it helpful. But what I know for a fact is that your book is really good and people will find that helpful too. Can you tell us where they can find it or like the name again? It's Starstruck, by the way, but let's just say it enough time so people remember it. Go buy. It comes out tomorrow. Give the spiel.
Yeah. The book is called Starstruck and it is available everywhere books are sold. So go literally anywhere books are sold and you'll find it. But support your indie bookstore. That's the most important thing, is support your local indie and or get the audiobook and listen to Shireen's amazing work.
I was just sitting there like in tears probably, but no. But I think reading along is fun. I when I listen to an audiobook, if I have time, I like to actually read along for some reason.
Really? I've never tried that.
I don't know why. Well, okay, this is... Maybe I'll explain this and that's about it. But my sister, she's only a year and a half older than me, and she would read to me a lot growing up before it was like I would want her to read versus I want to hear her say the story versus me reading it, even though I eventually knew how to read. Mm. It was just something about someone saying it to me.
Yeah.
And I just have always really enjoyed that. I still ask her to read stuff to me and she says no, but I still find it like comforting. I mean, for some
it's
reason.
A sense of connection. Like going back to like this whole thesis is like, it's a way for you to share something with her. And so that makes a lot of sense.
So it's still, I mean, me, I think that trickled down to me actually like absorbing information better if I read along to it, not just read it or listen to it. It's like the combination. And there's not always time to do that, but
yeah. So the summary is buy the book and then also buy the audiobook.
Yes.
That's really what lesson. We're saying.
Lesson for today is to do it all. And yeah, do you have social media that you want people to follow you at? You can say no.
No, I mean, sure. If you would like, I'm on all the social platforms at StarStrickenSF.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Come find me. Not on the Bluebird app though. That place is scary.
Yeah. Fuck that place.
Yeah. Hate it.
But go follow Serafina. Go buy her book and go release some anger in the meantime. I'm going to wrap us out of here.
Hey, I'm gonna read your own. That's my homework.
Yeah, I recommend. I'm going to wrap us out of here. This is Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, AMB on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, AMBIG on Instagram. This is Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
What am I at? Anna Hosnier on Twitter? And I'm at Selling Hosnier on Instagram. It is the platform I sell myself to you on. And then I have a Substack, sellinghostnew.substack.com, that I haven't posted in since last month because...
Doesn't matter, it's still great.
That John Bernthal piece really took me out, and then I have sort of lost my will. No, I'll be back. I have something brewing.
Ooh. That's enough incentive, I think, to go subscribe to the Substack, so go do that.
It takes me a while to write these things. I literally sit around for, like, days and just like, what is that? It's that Pablo Escobar meme of him just standing around by himself, staring at, like, nothing. That's like what I do for days as I'm just like ruminating on something I want to write. I like can't just sit and write it. I have to sit there and think about it for like 3 weeks. And then
if I didn't have deadlines writing my book, that would have been me. Yeah. Nothing would have ever gone. If they hadn't been externally imposed, I would have just done the same thing.
I like it. I like that's why I like Substack. It's like there's no pressure on me to continuously deliver. Like I can really think and only write about stuff that really sits on my mind.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Like John Bernthal being a cop.
What'd you say?
I said I'm gonna subscribe.
I said like John. Oh,
hell yeah! That's the end game. This whole podcast was to get another subscriber.
Yeah,
good for us.
Just to get another subscriber to Selling Hosnier my Substack.
Yes,
John Bernthal is.
But seriously,
a cop.
You guys, he is.
I don't even know.
And you can learn all of that and more. No, he's not. He's
not literally, but ACAB includes him because he has like a very copaganda podcast.
And ACAB includes Bernthal. Really, unfortunately, he's weird. Pretty hot, but he's still a cop.
Yeah, I talk about sort of my sort of tragedy in my mind of finding him hot and then Googling him and then realizing like,
he looks like a cop.
He does. He plays a lot of them. He plays a lot of bad cops.
I need to do a sort of an addendum to that because a lot of people reached out to me with stories about him afterward, and I got to go back and see if they'd let me talk about it. Just like people who like know him and go like,
That'll be great. I would look forward to that.
So if people will let me, I will add on to it with their stories.
Hell yeah. So everybody, you have some homework to do. Go subscribe to the Substack. Go buy the book, go listen to the book, and go follow Serafina on Instagram at StarstrickenSF. And until next time, go look at the moon.
Yeah.
Do that.
Yeah.
Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.